Ladies and gentlemen, the time is 6:04 in the p.m. You are listening to KOOP Hornsby Austin, 91.7 FM, or online worldwide at koop.org. You are listening to the Mascot Wedding Show, radio's hour of unspeakable power. My name is David Hotta, and with me as always is Mac Blake, who is tending to some radio business right now. The phone lines are open, 472-5667, 472-KOOP. We'll talk about what you want to talk about. We're opening the phones to the community. Ready, Mac?
That is correct. I cannot hear myself at all. Try to give out the phone number?
I did. Give it again.
472-5667. Anytime you want to call in and be a part of today's show, that is the number, 472-KOOP. As David said, this is the show where we open the phone lines to the community. So please do give us a call. And by the way, BTW, my name is Mac Blake. What did we just hear, David?
We just heard. Thank you. We just heard off the Boys and Girls in America album that was Stuck Between Stations by The Hold Steady. 4 minutes and 12 seconds of the tightest slam poetry was pretty much what that was.
Yeah, I usually like songs to be sung. Not a big fan of The Hold Steady. I know a lot of people that are, but me personally, not so much.
They're hit or miss to me. There are some songs where they just talk too much. And then there's this one where he talks sing-songy enough to where I'll let it slide. And I enjoyed that quite a bit off their latest release from all the way back in 2007. Oh, man. Remember those days? Gasoline cost like $2. I believe a comic book was like $3. What a crazy world we lived in back then, 2007.
Yeah, it was nuts. So how's it going, David?
It's going great. It's a nice, brisk, cool winter's day. No, it's not. I don't know.
It's really hot out.
Yeah, it's a hot like a mother.
Every time I go outside, I get the crystal mask.
The crystal mask?
Yeah, you know how in wrestling, when a wrestler would get blood all over his face, and they call that the crimson mask.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
I walk outside, I get sweat. Crystal mask.
Huh, okay, I get that.
That's also the... That term also is the expression for like when you do a lot of meth, like John Erler, and his face. He calls that the crystal mask as well.
Oh, okay. So that explains the crystal shield, where he does so much meth that he feels like there's a buffer in between him and the rest of the world at all times.
That's correct.
I like that. Okay. I am not one to do meth. John Erler, that's his cup of tea. I'll let him do that. That's fine.
Lord knows how many times he's pushed it upon us.
Oh, man. He loves cooking crystal.
Yep. He loves it. Love doing some science.
Should we be saying this on the radio? Should we be giving away his secrets?
We don't, you know.
Actually, you know what? He doesn't treat it like a secret. He'll do it in front of anybody, anytime, anywhere. There was this one time we were at the circus. Didn't even buy a ticket. He just jumped the fence. And I mean he jumped the fence, like he scaled it. And it was like 10 feet tall. But I heard that one. But yeah, we went to the circus. He fought a rhinoceros and won. Handily. It's quite impressive.
I guess. I don't know. I wasn't there. So, last show, we teased a couple things. We're going to get to them today.
Yes.
It's big summer movie time. You know what's weird? Is there a big sequel coming out this summer?
Besides all of them? Besides Indiana Jones?
Oh, Indiana Jones.
The Dark Knight.
There you go. That's
the Incredible
true.
Hulk. X-Files 2.
I mean, because last summer, total sequels. Nothing but sequels.
Yeah.
Bourne 3, Spider-Man 3, Pirates 3, Shrek 3?
I think so. Ocean's 13?
Ocean's 13, definitely. Fantastic Four 2.
Yeah.
And then this summer, I guess it's been so long.
Yeah, it doesn't really count, it feels like.
I'll tell you one sequel I'm not. Oh, hey, well, let me ask you this. Speaking of... We'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
Indiana Jones 4, you mentioned it. Have you seen it yet?
I saw it last night.
What'd you think?
It was fun. It was fun. Okay, let me put it this way.
David, was it fun?
No, that's... I left the theater almost chanting that to myself to sort of ease the pain of how unbelievably impossible it was.
What do you mean?
I hope I'm not giving away too much. You know what? I'm gonna try to say this without giving away too much. But in the other Indiana Jones movies, there is a realm of the fantastical. There are things that happen beyond belief. There are things that just happen that are otherworldly. But this one I thought was a little too much. I was like, you know what? I can't follow you down this road, Indy.
You know who I'm going to blame that on? CGI.
Yeah, I think I got the feeling that like Steven Spielberg was sitting behind the camera watching the dailies or on the little monitor, and like George Lucas snuck up behind him and said, you know, this would be a really good place to put like a prairie dog. Like, I think I could get some CGI ones to applaud.
See, I mean, this movie feels separate from the other three.
Yes.
And it's not because of time or of quality of script or even the fact that the villains are not Germans or not Nazis.
They're not Nazis.
They're commies.
Yeah.
But it feels more separate from me from the other ones because of the CGI.
Uh-huh. No, definitely. In the first three... maybe it was the time period, but I think they wanted to go with that sort of like that 1950s, like Saturday matinee serial kind of feel to it, where everything was done with stunts and everything was done the old fashioned way, handmade. This one just doesn't feel like that. This one feels like it almost feels like an Indiana Jones ripoff. Like it almost feels like if they made an Alan Quartermain sequel and just went with it.
You know, I had other issues with it. And the other things I liked, other things I disliked. I'm not saying, I don't want to rag on it.
Uh-huh.
You know, because it'll, well, who cares if I rag on it? It's still going to make a $1 trillion.
Yeah,
but you know what?
You're not going to affect ticket sales.
What is this, like the third day it's out?
Yes.
Folks still haven't seen it. I'm not going to give anything else away, except I will say this. And this is definitely less of a spoiler. This has nothing to do with the plot. There's several callbacks in the movie to the other movies.
Uh-huh.
And also... I'm not sure about this. I think there's a callback to the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles.
I noticed the Star Wars callback.
What was that?
It was when he says, I've got a bad feeling about this. Which, you know what? That's a callback to every movie. But come on. No, that's a Han Solo line.
All right.
That's a Han Solo line.
You've never had a bad feeling about something?
Yes, in relation to the stuff I was doing on Tatooine.
And somebody was like, man, I have a bad feeling about this. Be like, oh, real original.
Whatever,
like,
rip what? Off.
I do have a bad feeling.
Well, I'm sorry. Remember the other day when you were at the gas station and that guy cut you off? What did you say?
I don't know.
Hit him hard and fast.
I know.
Oh, thanks a lot, Reed Richards.
You said that.
Yeah. Well, I had shapeshifted into you.
Okay.
I put on your clothes.
No, I said something and then you said that. You said you should have said that.
Yeah, what'd you say? It's clobbering time?
Oh, you're splitting hairs here, buddy. What was I going to say?
Callbacks.
Yeah. There's one where he's talking to Jim Broadbent.
Yes.
Indiana Jones. He's like, man, it's been a rough couple years, Jim Broadbent. And then Indiana Jones looks at his desk, and there's a picture of the actor that played Marcus Brody.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a picture of Sean Connery from the third one.
Yes.
And he goes like, first Marcus died and then my dad. So he's got a picture of Sean Connery, which is obviously like a production still from the movie. You know, it's not, he didn't like pose for a, you know, it was just a frame capture and they, you know, put in their inkjet and now it's a frame portrait on his desk. But he's like, yep, my dad, played by Sean Connery, dead. If I was Sean Connery, I was watching that, I'd be like, what the hell? Like, I can't make a cameo? I'm dead? That's a little weird. It's not like he died on screen or anything. It was just like, well, Sean Connery's character's dead. I don't know. It struck me as weird.
He sort of looks over at Jim Broadbent. He's like, you remember when he died? And like they have this elaborate story or something. Like, do you remember when he got caught in that that grinder? Man.
Why kill him?
Yeah. Well, I mean, enough time had passed. I guess Sean, the real Sean Connery is still alive. Yeah,
no,
I see your point.
He couldn't have made like a cameo at the end or something like that?
No, I guess not. Maybe even like a ghostly image, like I'm proud of you, boy.
Because if they were trying to set some sort of like, oh, we want to, you know, make it known to the audience that Indiana Jones is kind of sad these days.
Yeah.
It's like, well, they spent 2 seconds on that. That was it. That was all the character development in terms of Indiana Jones being sad.
He might as well have just had like a big bowl of dust next to his desk so he could put his hands in it and then take them out and dust his hands off and say, well, that's all the news about my father.
Yep. Who's weird?
I have an issue with this, and I was talking to my lady about it.
This is also about the new Indiana Jones?
It's about all of them, actually. And I hope this isn't too much of a spoiler. It really shouldn't be. But the fourth one really hit it home. Indiana Jones is a lousy archaeologist. Because, you know, archaeologists are supposed to, like, preserve history. They're supposed to, if they stumble across something, like, oh, we must keep this skeleton in proper order. We must leave this room untouched. In every movie, pretty much every big discovery he finds ends up being like this crater in the ground. He's like, wow, that went away quickly. That just crumbled to dust. Like in the third Indiana Jones, when he's in the those like tombs where like there's gasoline in the water or whatever, and he needs to make a torch. What does he do? He like rips the arm off a skeleton and makes a nice little torch with it.
Hey, look, he's not after the small stuff.
Yeah, that's what I said. That was my argument.
Well, look, I mean, he's like
it's collateral damage.
Yeah, he's not there. He's like the Spurs. Okay.
Okay.
Bad example.
He's down in the. He's in
Here's
the hole.
The thing. Spurs win the. They didn't win the Southwest Division. They don't care. That's not what they're after.
Yeah.
After the finals, crown, even though they probably won't get it.
So they're after the proverbial Holy Grail.
Yes. They don't care about a skeleton here or there.
Which in the 30 Indiana Jones, I believe he let fall into a chasm.
The girl just died. I am not in the mood for you to make fun of Indiana Jones like that personally.
Like, I'm sure he goes
That's
back.
A personal attack.
He goes back to his college and he's like, you'll never guess what I found. And everybody's just sitting in the teacher's lounge like, sure, Indy. Holy Grail. Where is it now? Uh-huh.
Something that really surprised me in the fourth Indiana Jones is the political bent they gave Indiana. Yeah. Hardcore Republican.
Yes.
Turns out I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, you seemed pretty pleased by it.
I was.
You actually texted me at like 2 in the morning when you got out of the movie theater. Just could not stop raving about how much of a hardcore Republican he was.
The one where he meets that one treasure hunter who's played by a Middle Easterner, uh-huh. and he looks in the camera and he goes, someday we'll elect a president to take care of you guys. Really a kind of super racist, but at the same time, I could see what he was getting at, and I applaud that.
Yeah. You actually, a friend of mine went with you, and he said you stood up and applauded in the theater.
Wow. You're really stretching this out, aren't you?
Yeah.
A friend of mine went with you.
Well, I couldn't say I went with you.
Yeah. You could say I told you that. Another sequel just announced.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if this is summer movie fare, but it's coming out. S. Darko, the sequel to Donnie Darko.
Right.
And I believe it's starring his little sister.
Maggie?
No. Not Jake Gyllenhaal's little sister, Maggie Gyllenhaal. In the movie, he had Maggie Gyllenhaal, his real-life sister, played his older sister.
Okay.
And then the younger one who's in Sparkle Motion.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay.
And I think it's starring her.
Sure. Fine.
But Richard Kelly, the dude.
The genius behind Donnie Darko. You
know, I'll say this.
The visionary.
My speech is like a word tree. And I was like, should I say genius or should I say dude? So genius is definitely on there. It would be a mocking genius. But man, he's not involved in this at all.
Oh. Aw.
He's not writing it. He's not directing it. He's just collecting a paycheck.
Okay.
Jake Gyllenhaal is not involved in it either.
Okay.
I don't know if the parents are involved in it at all, but I can't imagine why they wouldn't be. What else are they doing? I don't know the actor and the actress's name who played Mr. and Mrs. Darko.
Right.
Which sounds stupid just saying it.
The Darkos.
But did you like Donnie Darko, David?
No, I hated it.
You hated it?
I hated
why
it.
Why did you hate Donnie Darko?
It felt like it was trying to be too many things at once. It was trying to be like a science fiction movie that's going to blow your mind. But it was also a commentary on like suburbia, how it's just as weird as the city. And it was also like a teen dramedy. And it was also like an action movie. Like, not an action movie. It was like this suspenseful little thriller. And it succeeded in none of those.
See, I liked it.
Okay.
I thought I liked its nice little atmosphere. It's definitely is indulgent in certain aspects. And I've seen the movie about 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
One of those times was with the director's commentary. And I'll tell you, that time travel stuff didn't make any more sense. I mean, I sat there and mapped it out, and it doesn't work.
You literally did sit there and map it out.
Another movie I mapped out and didn't make sense, Deja Vu, with with Denzel Washington.
I have not seen that yet, so I got on that endorsement.
I know. Deja Vu really doesn't make sense. That's almost like magical realism.
I want to see your quote on the DVD box, like, bring a piece of paper.
This just doesn't work. Mac Blake, ain't it cool news? Who cares? Actually, if I was saying ain't it cool news, my name would probably be like Sharky or something like that. Or Meek the Cat.
Yeah, Bob the Goon.
Yeah, there we are. Something. Not so silent, Bob. I hate ain't it cool news. I haven't gone there in 3 years. Maybe it's gotten better.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay. But yeah, but still at the same time, like, S. Darko. Right now, here's the other thing about Donnie Darko, and even Todd Barry has like a joke about this. If, according to MySpace, it's America's favorite movie.
Yes.
Like, it's got quite a little cult following. People are way too into it. That's a good reason not to like it. The reasons you gave, garbage. Rubbish.
Really?
You're an idiot. I want to smash you. No, I mean, I agree with you that it had a lot of stuff. Some of it doesn't work. I think some of it does.
Enough to say it's an entertaining movie?
Oh, entertaining.
It's not entertaining. It's boring.
No, Donnie Darko's entertaining.
Ugh. I'm not going to rip on an Austinite. It's not as boring as some movies.
What movie?
Waking Life.
Oh, Waking Life is so boring. Oh, my God. I fell asleep.
Let's step away from that one.
Why?
Grindhouse. Let's go Grindhouse. Let's go.
Why can't I make fun of Waking Life? Who am I afraid to...
Richard Linklater, nice guy.
Oh, was he going to... Okay, I'm sure he's a nice guy, but that movie was boring. I liked other movies he did.
Yeah, I loved other movies.
I like School to Rock.
Yes.
Even though Tom Sharpling had that criticism about like how he's into every kind of music.
It's the least rocking movie. Like, here, you want to learn how to rock? Listen to some Yes.
But Waking Life, I literally fell asleep.
Yeah, I kind of did too.
Parts of Grindhouse, I literally was looking around the theater.
So was I.
Because I was so bored. I was like, maybe The Wall is more interesting. But I thought Donnie Darko was entertaining.
No.
But the fact that like the star is not attached, the writer, director, the creative force behind the first one is not attached, means that, you know, Fox or whoever, I think it was Fox.
It was New Line.
Said that like, we can make money off of this. Mm-hmm. You know, like this is a bankable franchise.
Yeah, my question to them, can you?
I mean, really, is it that popular? Like, is that many, you know, people's favorite movie on MySpace? If you click on that term, like, are you in a group of 5,000 people? Like, is that how it works?
Yeah,
25,000? 50,000?
Let me throw an analogy out there.
Yeah.
Another movie that gained some steam on the aftermarket, or the secondary market.
Uh-huh.
Home video classic, Clerks. Do you think the Weinsteins are really happy about themselves for greenlighting Clerks 2?
Clerks 2, same writer, director, same actors. Everybody came back. It's because they wanted to do it.
And it still stunk. It stunk on ice.
Let me ask you this. Do you think the Weinsteins went to Kevin Smith and they go, Kevin Smith, we're sick of your horrible new ideas. We want one of your horrible old ideas. Make Clerks 2. No, but this time, like, New Line Fox,
that's
whoever,
true.
They came to Richard Kelly, like, Richard. And it's not like Richard Kelly, hot commodity. Southland Tales, the fallout from that bomb still being felt.
Yes. And they're not allowed to live on the back lot for like another 10 years.
But they're like, yeah, this Donnie Darko thing, this is a moo, hear that? Cash cow, cash cow, cash cow. Let's milk it some more. I was super surprised.
And I can't think of I'm having a hard time. I know it's out there, but I'm having a hard time thinking of a sequel where none of the original creative team was involved.
Absolutely none.
Like, I know it's out there. It's on the tip of my tongue, but I can't think of it. 4725667, can you help me out?
I think Scream 3. What's that guy's name? He was really hot for a while. Kevin Williamson?
Kevin Williamson, yeah.
Yeah, he didn't have anything to do with it, I think.
Yeah, but they're still like...
But they still had the same actors and everything. But yeah, nothing. Wow, we really talked up a storm.
We just covered a third of the topics we wanted to talk about.
We wasted an entire half hour talking about the finer points of a movie.
Bitching about a movie.
You probably haven't seen. And then disagreeing about... Well, it's good that we're disagreeing about something because... I think we agree too much on this show.
I was just thinking the same thing the other day.
Because people get no, you weren't. See, look right there. Because people get the impression that like David and Mac, best of friends. No, bitter rivals.
Yeah, and they see us on the street and see us wearing matching overalls and they're like, really, guys? But no, we have points of contention all the time.
We're like Kobe and Shaq those 3 years where they won the titles. It was our contention that brought us together.
Because we're best friends in public, but we secretly hate each other.
That's right. KOP, you're on the air.
Hey, I was going to say Blair Witch Project 2.
Ah, thank you.
Good.
Yeah, nobody had anything to do from the first one to the second one.
Did you see Blair Witch 2?
Unfortunately, I'm a dumbass, and I totally actually did go see it, and it was horrible.
Oh, you went to see it.
God-awful. So, yeah, that's one of them that no one from the first one had anything to do with the second one.
Well, did you like the first one?
Yeah, well, it was all right. I mean, I guess, kind of. It was a good idea, you know, whatever. It was a cool idea. It was cheap to make, and they made $1 million off of it.
That is true. I heard that if it made, like, $20,000, the studio was supposed to buy them, like, a foosball table. So,
if I like foosball, so that's pretty worth it. But
yeah, there you go.
So you would take the foosball table
that's
over.
The only way that movie, but yeah, would be worth it to me. Then yeah, there you go. Right on, man. Well, I just want to tell you guys that, man. You guys are doing a good job. Bro.
Thanks a lot. What's your name, caller?
I'm Justin. Man.
Say what?
I'm Justin.
Justin, thanks for calling in.
No problem, bro. Thanks.
Okay. Have a good day. All right, folks. We will be back with some more.
Mascot Wedding Show right after this.
How's it going, David? We are back.
It's going great.
With the Mascot Wedding Show here on 91.7 KOOP. I don't know if we have a caller or not. Let me see.
Go for it.
Nope. Sure don't.
Oh, those are old friend Wally. God, I feel terrible about that one now.
Why?
Because I was dumb.
Oh, okay. The way you said that, though, it's like you're like, shouldn't make fun of Wally that way.
No, I opened up the wound of the bad joke I just made by asking me, why do you feel bad about that, David?
So we actually have a topic today on today's show.
Yes, we do.
What is it?
The topic is, we teased it last week, but I love actors and actresses who just chew scenery. I love it when they overact. I love it when they deliver their lines with gusto. So I got to thinking, what would be the all scenery chewing cast? And I want to hear from the people out there, 4725667. I don't even have a plot for this movie. I need help. The best I can think of right now is maybe it's a cop drama.
Cop dramas would be good because you'd have, you know what, maybe how about this? Police chief convention.
What's happening at the police chief convention?
Well, of course, something goes wrong, but that's how you get them all in one place. But who, all right, all scenery chewing.
Okay.
All scenery chewing cast, right?
Yes. Like, I want to be able to walk out of that movie saying, wow, that movie is going to be nominated for like 20 Oscars, and they're all going to be in the acting categories. So, like, we're talking Willem Dafoe. We're talking Gene Hackman. We're talking Alfred Molina.
Alfred Molina?
Yes. He is good in everything he does.
Okay, but he doesn't chew scenery.
Yeah, he does. He chews it with his brilliance.
No, that's not how that works.
Yes!
That's not what scenery chewing means.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Would you like to talk about a little movie called Boogie Nights?
Okay, he doesn't chew scenery in that.
Spider-Man 2.
Oh, he definitely doesn't chew scenery in Spider-Man
2. He does!
Only in the parts
okay,
where...
Okay, fine. Okay, Alfred Molina. Okay, fine. Let's take him out.
He's got some subtlety to him.
He does have some... Okay, yeah, I see you. Okay, that's fine.
Him out. It's like Chuck Heston. You know, he doesn't underact anything. That guy could chew some scenery.
That guy X the hell out of every part he does.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right, fine. I retract Alfred Molina. I'll save him for another movie I'm doing of people I can't get enough
of. So who do you have in the all scenery chewing cast?
All right, so far I've got Willem Dafoe, Gene Hackman.
Willem Dafoe.
Yes. Yes.
Folks, if you have went away in on this, 472-5667, 472-KOOP.
Come on. He would be at the cop convention. Maybe there's a crooked cop among them. And he's the detective put on the case to find the crooked cop.
I don't know if he chews scenery, though.
Yeah, he does. Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding you. What does he chew scenery in?
Boondock Saints.
Okay,
Spider-Man 1.
Spider-Man 1.
He was just eating that one up.
Spider-Man was a comic book movie. That's a bad example. That's
no,
like
it's
saying,
not a bad example.
Yeah, it is.
You need someone who can support the weight of a comic book role.
That's like saying Uma Thurman's a scenery chewer just because of Batman and Robin.
No, but she didn't even chew the scenery in that one.
Well, she vamps out of control. Oh, because she's a girl. She can't chew scenery.
No.
That's what you're saying, isn't it?
That's not what I'm saying.
So sexist. Let's see if this caller can help us out. KOP, you're on the air.
Hi, I think Broderick Crawford would eat William Dafoe for an appetizer.
What has Roderick Crawford been in?
Good Lord. Every 50s cop film they've ever made.
That's before my time.
But all right.
Tell you what, we'll Google it.
All right, bye.
All right, thanks a lot. Roderick Crawford, Adam.
Yeah, well, let's look him up. Well, not right now. Yeah, go ahead and look him up.
Well, just because I look him up doesn't mean I won't know. We'll have to do some research. We'll get back to you on that. That'll be our homework.
Yeah.
Watch a Roderick Crawford movie. Well, I don't know about William Dafoe.
Okay. That's what the topic is on the table for. We gotta sift through this. We gotta sort this one out. So if I were to say, like, Ben Gazzara.
You know what? He definitely chewed scenery in, which is funny. Maybe, you know what? Willem Dafoe, he'd be the understudy. Because, which is weird because this is such a bad movie. Did you ever see Once Upon a Time in Mexico?
Of course I did.
Okay. They made him like the big Mexican bad guy.
Yes, they did.
Which
and what did he do?
He had like two lines of dialogue. Well, but see, the definition of chewing scenery is different from being just like, you know, sort of overbearing. It's, you know, it's sort of expressive in this like, you know, largesque way or something like that, like a grand sort of actor.
No, I agree with that, but it's also just a complete domination of the role, like regardless of quality. You're like, you know what? I'm going to make these people believe I am some sort of Mexican Fatterally or something.
All right. Well, Ben Gazzara. Definitely.
Are we good with Ben Gazzara?
Oh, totally. Ben
okay.
Gazzara. Ben Gazzara.
I'm going to throw one out there.
Yeah.
I kind of don't want him in the movie, but I want to get your opinion on it.
Okay.
Christopher Walken.
Of course he chews scenery.
Okay.
Just because he chews scenery quietly sometimes. Because another aspect of the chew scenery is that... you never sort of like lose yourself in the role, meaning that we can always tell it's you, Christopher Walken,
yeah,
acting like, it's like, you know, instead of getting into sort of the subtleties, your character has no nuance. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All of his characters like Christopher Walken.
Yeah.
That's what they are.
Even in Sleepy Hollow, it was like, hey, Christopher Walken dyed his hair. Like, that was it.
Sean Connery, mentioned before.
Sean Connery.
I just watched Hunt for Red October yesterday. That guy could play a Russian like I could play a Russian. Meaning I just use my same voice. KLOP, you're on the air.
Yeah, the definition of chewing scenery has to be Jack Nicholson.
Jack Nicholson.
There you go. Okay.
Very good.
Yeah.
He's definitely on that list.
So how do you see him in this movie? What's his role?
I just watched that product over here.
So how do you see him in this movie? What role would he be?
Well, he'd probably have to be one of the chiefs, I would imagine.
Got any ideas for the plot?
Right. No, not right now.
All right, well, think about it. What's your name, caller?
My name's Brett.
Brett, thanks for calling in.
Thanks.
Brett coming correct with Jack Nicholson, definitely on the list.
Yeah, and I love Jack Nicholson. I don't know why I didn't think of him. He's a scenery chewer.
He is a scenery chewer. How about some ladies? Let's get some ladies
Let's get some ladies in here. I want someone who can, like, pound on the coffin at the cop funeral.
Why did you have to pound on the coffin?
Because she is upset.
Oh.
It won't even be her husband. It'll just be like her husband's like bowling buddy.
So because she's,
and she'll push people aside to get to the coffin so she can pound on it and claim vengeance.
Let me ask you this. Will there be any dudes pounding on the coffin?
Yeah. Yeah, there will be. Cause, you know why? Because they're scenery chewers. You think Ben Gazzara won't get pounded in? Of course he will.
All right. Well, what's a good lady scenery chewer?
Good lady scenery chewer. You know who comes to mind immediately?
Who?
Talia Shire.
Who's that?
From Rocky and Godfather.
Who's she playing Godfather?
She was a sister.
Oh, she was also in Rocky. Oh!
Yes. She can get fiery.
Chew scenery, though. She can get fiery, sure, but does she chew scenery?
Yes.
I don't know, Rocky. Adrian, do you want to go out to eat?
Okay.
I'd rather stay at home. That's not chewing scenery.
All right, fine.
No scenery's being
chewed. Chewing scenery. Chewing scenery.
You know who's pretty good at chewing scenery? All right. I don't know if I'd put her in this movie after incubating for a couple years.
Okay.
Michelle Rodriguez. She's always like, I'm Michelle Rodriguez. Like, she's always like, I'm super tough.
That's true.
It's kind of a dark horse candidate.
Okay, yeah.
But you know what? Give her a couple years.
You know what? Maybe she's, okay.
You know what she's got to do? We'll put her to a test. We'll make another movie before the all-senior chewing movie.
Yeah.
Or maybe we'll cast her like in a TV show or something where she plays some sort of ruler.
Okay. Let's get some get her sea legs under
her.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay, I'm fine with that.
You know who else chews scenery, but a lady chinery sewer? Take two. A lady scenery chewer who's not making this movie, though.
Hmm.
Vanessa Williams.
Vanessa Williams from Ugly Betty?
Yeah. But you know what? I don't want her in there.
Okay.
Because the other thing about scenery chewer is you have to be entertaining as well.
Okay. Oh! Ah! Ah! Ah!
Yeah.
Angela Bassett.
Angela Bassett.
Yes.
I wouldn't say no, but I can't say yes.
She can chew some scenery. Oh, Lawrence Fishburne also. I'm sorry. I just had What's Love Got to Do with It playing in my head. I'm sorry.
Well, there's the king of scenery chewing, the current modern king of scenery chewing we haven't mentioned yet.
Who's that?
Sam Jackson.
Sam Jackson, yes.
I think his next movie is called Scenery Chewing. He's like, snakes on a plane, just gave people what they wanted. I'm going to keep it going with some scenery chewing.
His entire movie, he's going to be wearing a lobster bib with film strip on it.
A lobster bib, yes. That's one of the scenes where they go to Red Lobster and they just start like mobbing it up. Like, the, where are my cheddar bay biscuits? You know, they just, like, you know, chew out the, like, Gene Hackman's like, I do horrible Gene Hackman. But
let's hear Gene Hackman.
It's like, what's the name of the guy who's working at Red Lobster when the police chiefs go there?
Jackie.
Jackie. He'd be like, Jackie, because I'm Gene Hackman. Come here, Jackie. What's good? What's good on the menu? And then he would just, you know, have him fired or something.
That was a terrible Gene Hackman.
I told you I did a terrible Gene Hackman.
Jeff Goldblum? Yes.
Okay, he's not a good actor, but he...
He is Jeff Goldblum in every role he does.
But does he chew scenery,
Yes,
though?
He does.
Yeah, but is he ever, like... Is he ever this sort of grand, like, largesque actor?
Yes.
No.
Yes!
What movie?
Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park, he's like, I'm Jeff Goldblum. But see, it's
but he was captivating.
Yeah.
See, that was a better Gene Hackman. It was captivating.
All right, well, why didn't you do it then? Why
all right, 4725667, do your best Gene Hackman.
Jeff Goldblum does not chew scenery. Because he's never like, I don't know, he's not wide-eyed.
Okay, I want him in a cameo. I want him as the forensics expert.
He can be in it, but he can't play a chief.
No, he's not going to, no, of course he's not a chief.
No.
No, we need to round out this cast. We need, like, everybody to chew some scenery. I want a fist fight at the camera.
Because the best scenery chewers, it's not just over actors. Because mm-hmm. Ben Stiller's not making this list.
No, he's not making this list.
It's you overact in sort of this, like, it's almost like you, at any point in time, Sam Jacks could be like, no longer can you call me Sam on the set. You have to call me some sort of god's name or something like that. Like, I am Zeus or something like that.
And he was in Die Hard 3.
There you go. Like, for instance, would you say Bruce Willis chews scenery?
No.
Yeah. I wouldn't say so either.
No, I didn't. That's why I didn't list him on the list.
That is correct. You know what? It helps to be older.
It does.
As well.
I think there's an old school involved.
This culture's too young. But you know what? Get some regalness under your belt there and some wisdom.
Yeah.
That's how you chew scenery. Experience. You've chewed scenery before. This ain't my first rodeo that I've chewed to the ground with my teeth. Acting chops.
Oh, is that what that means? Acting chops?
I don't know.
Let's pretend it does.
Okay.
I like that.
All right. Tell you what, folks. We'll take a quick break. 472-5667. Going to play a song here, but give us a call back if you got some more scenery chewers. We'll be back with some more music or some more of the Mascot Wedding Show after this. We're back. The Mascot Wedding Show. My name is Mac.
I'm David.
And this is Mascot Wedding Show, the...
the summer movie edition.
How do you describe the show again?
A hearty stew of talk.
No, you had a certain thing for it, like the unspeakable power of ours.
Oh, the radio's hour of unspeakable power.
There it is, part of the new power revolution Saturday.
Which I delivered with... I was dripping power on the microphone.
I could hear it. I could hear it, definitely.
Yeah. What did we just hear, Mac?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry about that.
Good question. We just heard Yo La Tengo with Stockholm Syndrome off of I Can Hear the Heart Beating as One.
Are you kidding me? I was going to play some Yo La Tengo to finish the show. Now I got to call an audible.
Is that what that is?
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you're going to play one of your favorite bands. You can't recognize one of their hugest hits. Well, actually,
I didn't say they're one of my favorite bands.
To your credit or whatever, that's one of the songs sung by... the drummer, what's his name?
Ira. Oh, now who's the biggest fan? I don't even know.
AKA Dump. This is a solo project.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, that song, it's one of my summer songs.
Yeah.
Maybe because it says summer in it. Summer's what you make it. I don't know what put the idea.
That's
in my
so
head.
Weird. Yeah, it goes on my pantheon of summer songs. Summer in the City. Donna Summer.
Yeah.
All of her catalog, I celebrate it all.
That's true. That's a good way, because it is hot out.
Yeah.
Hot out. It's hot out. Yep.
472-5667, 472-KOOP. We need to fill out this cast for the All Scenery Chewing movie.
That's right. Help us think of who should be in the All Scenery Chewing movie.
And we also need someone to decide whether or not Donnie Darko is awful, because we're tied at one right now.
Dude, hey, what are these floodgates? Let me open them. Tell you what, only call in if you support me and you actually like the movie.
I just want to prove how right I am.
Like, we all, its faults are well known, but is it entertaining is the question.
No.
David says no. If you, I don't know if I want to open that floodgate. Well,
I think Blues Brothers 2000 was more entertaining than Donnie Darko.
I'll never know.
Have you really never seen it?
Why is that hard to believe?
No, because I didn't. Hang on, let me compose my thoughts here, because as you know, Blues Brothers was my favorite movie of all time. I was there opening day when Blues Brothers 2000 came out. I knew it was going to be terrible. I knew it. But I had to see for myself.
See, I don't have that passion within me to see horrible movies just because they're so bad.
But no, well, this wasn't just... I mean, this wasn't like I was going to go see Saw 4.
Yeah.
This was a sequel, which I did see.
In the theater, right?
Yes, I saw it.
It takes a really rare gem for me to want to go see something because it's going to be so bad.
But this is a sequel to my favorite movie ever.
And maybe this doesn't help Donnie Darko's argument, but Southland Tales.
Yeah.
I was really excited because I expected that to be horrific. But you know what? I didn't even get around to seeing that.
What is your favorite movie?
I don't have like a favorite movie.
Okay.
Incredibles is pretty good. I really like Spider-Man 2.
Okay, what if The Incredibles 2 came out, but instead of Pixar being behind it, it was like Don Bluth, creator of American Tail and Four Time.
Okay, I would not go see it.
You would not go see it?
No.
But it's The Incredibles 2.
No, it's not really. You see what I'm saying? It's not really Blues Brothers 2. It's I Need Money, Let Me Mine an Idea.
All right.
How about Blues Brothers? But to answer your question, I really liked Spider-Man 2. Spider-Man 3, I went and saw that. And that was like someone opening my spine and stabbing me with a corkscrew at times. Okay. Other times when Spider-Man was fighting, that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I like Spidey.
Yeah, when he was fighting Lowell from Wings. That was great.
Dude, that was the best part of the movie.
Well, yeah, it was the best part of the movie.
Now when
he was fighting Lowell from Wings, and that was the best part of the movie. That's what I'm saying about the movie.
The whole Sandman thing.
Yeah, it's
like,
pretty cool.
That's the sort of Sam Raimi like thumbprint on it.
You know what I love? I love that...
we're getting off topic. Go ahead.
No, we're not. This is the topic. We're just talking movies today. Like, my tongue is dry from licking the envelope on this show today and mailing it in.
I never mail it in, son.
But I love how the CGI on a creature made of sand looks so much more believable than, like, Star Wars. Like, really, George Lucas, what's the matter with you?
Well, back to Indiana Jones.
Mm-hmm.
The worst thing about the Star Wars movies was not Jar Jar Binks or how he looked.
Right.
It was when you... it's like the green screen stuff.
Yeah.
If you're going for realism and you're in front of a green screen, you really can't get it right now. I mean, like, Sin City, besides being the world's most violent movie...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it sort of worked on that level just because it wasn't trying to look realistic. It was trying to look pretty stylized.
It was looking stylized.
I think Sean is going to sue us for stealing his show. Although, I don't think he talks about Spider-Man 3.
Yeah.
I think he's maybe a little bit...
really? You sure? I thought he was going to do an entire episode on Blues Brothers 2000.
Blues Brothers, exactly. But Indy 4, the parts where you could tell it's CGI in the back, I don't like it. All right, so Dave and I are trying to construct a movie consisting of nothing but people who chew scenery, mm-hmm. scenery chewers, an all-scenery chewing cast.
And we are at odds. We are butting heads as to what constitutes a scenery chewer.
Let's work on that plot a little bit, though.
Okay. So it's a policeman's convention.
The police chief's convention.
Police chief's convention. So chiefs from all around the country.
The movie starts out, and we see each police chief where they're from,
mm-hmm.
and we see them like yelling at people before they leave, like, "Before I go to this convention, Minetti, you know, like, you better get it in order," or something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, is Tommy Lee Jones a scenery chewer?
Is Tommy Lee Jones a scenery chewer? Yes, yes, he is.
Tommy Lee Jones chewing somebody out, doing kind of laconic style.
Yeah.
He's coming at you like 50 words a minute. Takes a guy doesn't even know he's insulted yet.
Yeah, as he puts on his cowboy hat because he is the police chief of Dallas.
That's right.
See, we also have to put these people where they would be. It's like the Street Fighter of police chief convention movies.
Where would Ben Gazzara? What would he?
That was the dumbest thing I've ever said.
What city would he be the police chief of?
Ben Gazzara. He would be the police chief of. I love how I had to get in the role to figure out where he. Chicago.
Chicago.
Yes.
Who would be the Russian police chief?
The Russian police chief. Who would be the Russian police chief? I really gotta stop.
Is Denzel
on that.
Washington? Not for the Russian chief.
Is he a scenery chewer?
Yeah.
No. Well. No.
Well, he's too good in other things.
Yeah. Well.
Maybe we should just make it Connery again, just so he can do his, air quotes, Russian accent.
I got to see the Hunt for Red October again.
All right. Speaking of Hunt for Red October and scenery chewers, is Alec Baldwin a scenery chewer at this stage in his career?
I don't know.
I think he could play one, but I don't think he is one.
I think he could play one. But I don't think he is one. Here we go. No. Yes, because he would be the police chief of the city of Boston. Just,
oh man. The Departed.
Yes, just spreading it on thick. Like, you could put his performance on pancakes. Just, yeah, I like that. I like that a lot.
Let me ask you this. Clint Eastwood.
No.
He's getting up there.
Bruce Dern would be a police chief in this movie.
You know, I bet Bruce Dern's going to call us and be like, thank you for casting me in a movie. It's like, well, we're not
no,
actually
Bruce.
Doing it.
It's Bruce,
like,
you don't get it. It's a radio show.
This is the closest I've come to working in quite some
That's
time.
Not true. He was in I couldn't even tell you the last movie he was in.
Oh, what about Nick Nolte?
Nick Nolte would be in there, as would the guy he gets confused for very often, Gary Busey.
I don't think the other actors want Gary Busey there. Maybe it's Gary Busey's murder who spurs on the police chiefs.
No! Gary Busey is the crime lord, sort of stirring the pot on this one.
Is that what happens? Maybe we could... So they're all these police chiefs are at a convention.
Yes.
They're all just chewing sceneries, yelling at each other.
Yes.
The movie is basically nothing but yelling.
There's going to be like a big kiosk outside the theater that just sells aspirin. Like, you're going to need this. It's going to hurt your head by the time it's all done.
Now, Michelle Rodriguez, a little young to make chief.
She is.
Maybe she's like a liaison who's like, will you shut up? Like, constantly saying that.
Maybe she's the one organizing the convention. Maybe she's like the keynote speaker.
Maybe she is the one who organized the convention. She used to be on the streets, but because she's playing by her own rule book, they bust her down to this cookie cake assignment.
I like it. I like that. That's okay.
They're like, I want to be on the streets where I get results. The chief's like, you'll get results here when I tell you to. And then they make her like, you'll tear tickets at the police chief convention. So there, some sort of crime has to happen to set the chiefs in motion.
Yes. It's going
Maybe
to be...
Gary Busey gets up there to give the keynote address. Gets taken out of the sniper's bullet.
Okay.
You know who kills him? Colin Farrell.
Is Colin Farrell a senior?
No, he's not. He's just bad. He's just bad. Whoa. You know who chews scenery like nobody's business?
Who's that?
Mr. Thomas Cruise.
Tomas? Do we have Tomas in the movie?
He doesn't play enough villains.
He doesn't play enough villains.
Maybe he's the young police chief. It's gone bad. They find out at the end that it was one of their own. It was Chief Cruise.
Yeah, because he's tired of... Hackman busting his bees all the time.
Yeah, like, he's like, why'd you do it, Cruz? Or something like that. That could be anyone. That is not a specific impression. And they could be like, well, you know, you other guys hogging the spotlight. That's why it's Cruz's time to shine.
Maybe, and if we can't afford Cruz, maybe we get Budget Cruz.
How about this?
Now you're going to ask me who Budget Cruz is?
Who's Budget Cruz?
Kiefer Sutherland. Yes. Scenery chewer extraordinaire.
Is Donald Sutherland a scenery chewer?
Ooh.
I don't think so.
I like him too much to put him in this movie. I don't want him to suffer through it.
Yeah. How about this? How about somehow all the chiefs get framed and they have to go to jail?
And then they're all in prison?
They're all in prison. Sam Jackson, Gene Hackman, Ben Gazzara.
Yeah.
Not Willem Dafoe. Who else do we say? Sean Connery?
Sean Connery's not going to jail.
Oh, he went to jail in that one movie.
Which one?
That one with like Matthew Broderick, where it was like Family Business or something. I don't know any of it. Wedding Crunchers. What do you want?
Yeah.
Chris Watkins in there. Then they have to bust out and prove their innocence.
Okay.
And along the way, they also have to babysit some kids.
And they're all chained together. It's like a row of 12 hammy actors shackled at the knees.
Maybe they stop by Schwarzenegger's house and be like, you know, like, help me out. And Arnold's like, ugh. I'll help you out with food, so you have to watch my kids.
Kids?
Like, yeah, they got to watch kids for like a day. I'm liking this movie.
I'm kind of loving it.
Need to flesh out that cast, though. We are drawing... no, we're not.
What time is it?
Yeah, 6 till.
Yeah, we're fine.
Yeah, okay. You're fine. It's more like it.
Thank you. 4725667. Come on. Let's power through. We got the last few minutes of the Mascot Wedding Show for the week.
Oh, I know one thing you wanted to talk about.
What's that?
Another sequel, Anchorman Dose.
Yes. They are...
How do you feel about that?
I'm okay with it.
Well, first of all, Anchorman 2, who's making it?
It would be the same team, I believe. It would be Farrell and McKay. Adam McKay, director of Anchorman and Talladega Nights.
And your thoughts?
I like it. I think it's a good idea. I don't think it's a good idea, but I think they'll pull it off. How about that?
Talladega Nights kind of felt like Anchorman 2.
What?
KOP, you're on the air.
Is there any way you could put Nicolas Cage in there and just have him killed?
Ooh. Nick David, is Nicolas Cage an overactor or a scenery chewer?
He's always Nicolas Cage. Always Nicolas Cage now.
That's true. He is always Nicolas Cage. Yeah. I would say he's more of an overactor than a scenery chewer, though.
Okay, you're right. But I tried.
But what about him in The Rock, though? He definitely chews scenery in The Rock.
Yeah, that was such a bad movie, too.
Okay, maybe put him in a... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It's okay. It's with Sean Connery, though. So, yeah, that's a good example right there.
Reunited, and it feels so good.
All right, buddy. Thanks, man.
Thanks a lot, man.
I put Nick Cage in there.
Oh, turn that off. Thank you.
I'd say he definitely chews scenery.
I would put him in a minor role.
He's too young to make chief.
Yeah.
Maybe he is Michelle Rodriguez or partners.
Oh, maybe.
Yep.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Michelle Rodriguez and Nicolas Cage are like beat cops.
Uh-huh.
And they're assigned to figure out what happened at the chief convention. And they're being told what to do and what not to do by all the chiefs. None of them will cooperate.
How about this? When the chief gets framed, it's Michelle Rodriguez and Nicolas Cage's job to track him down.
Okay.
When they bust out of jail. But they're torn up about it. And they also happen to chew some scenery. KOP, you're on the air.
Could you better explain what you mean by chewing scenery?
Okay, actually, Mac and I are at odds about this, but I'm going with the thought that someone comes into the role and just owns it, no matter how awful the role is. Like they want you to believe that they run a grocery store, like with conviction and heart. Even though you're like, really, you're not running a grocery store? Like, I give the example of Willem Dafoe in Boondock Saints. Like, he's this over-the-top detective, just really milking every second for his worth. But there's no way in hell there would ever be a detective who acts like Willem Dafoe. So
okay.
That's what I'm going with.
So they're not believable, but they're trying to make you believe. They're overdoing it.
Yeah, overdoing it, but sort of like overdoing it in kind of like a large, almost like such an authoritative, like grand way. So it's not just overacting. It's almost like, you know, overacting with some menace. It's kind of hard to describe. Go ahead and watch anything Sam Jackson does, and that's chewing scenery.
Okay, thanks.
Except Pulp Fiction. Does he chew scenery in that one?
Yeah, he does.
What about his partner in crime there, John Travolta?
No, he is not a scenery chewer. Aren't you glad you came early? Aren't you glad you got to sit through this one?
Speaking of, be sure to keep it tuned here for the next part of the New Power Saturday Revolution, The Clear Spot. The Clear Spot. So it looks like our time is up. If you want to listen to some podcasts this show, you can check out mascotwinning.com.
And to finish out, we're going to listen to a little bit of the action off the Old Gold album. Tune in next week for more Mascot Wedding Show. Tune in about 3 minutes for The Clear Spot.
Goodbye, David.
Goodbye, Mac.